You already understand the basic ideas behind long-duration energy storage, even if you've never heard that term before. If you've ever built a lemon battery, rolled a marble down a ramp, pumped a water gun, or watched a grandfather clock tick, then you already know the science behind most energy storage technologies. They're just the same simple principles, scaled up until they fill warehouses, mine shafts, or whole valleys. Long-duration energy storage, or LDES, basically just means storing energy for longer than a typical lithium-ion battery is built for. That might be 10 hours, a couple of days, or even a whole season. Same physics, much bigger ambition. But if the science is that straightforward, you might wonder, why has long-duration storage suddenly exploded with dozens of startups, billions in investment, and some of the wildest ideas anyone has ever put in a pitch deck? It's because long-duration storage isn't really a story about complicated technology. It's a story about timing. How do you run a grid where wind and solar don't always show up exactly when you need them? That's what this video is about. And to explain it, I want to revisit some of those high school science experiments because they turn out to be surprisingly helpful for understanding the whole long-duration energy storage universe, from flow batteries to compressed air to gravity towers to hydrogen. I'm Rosie Barnes, founder of Paddlet Consulting. We advise on clean energy technologies, assisting startups with their development and helping investors assess the landscape. Welcome to Engineering with Rosie. The renewable grid we're heading for is something completely new in the history of electricity. Since the beginning of electrification, most grids have been designed around burning things to either make steam or directly turn a turbine. When you want to make more electricity, you burn faster. Thermal generators were steady and predictable, and so was hydro and geothermal, for that matter, for the few grids based on them. Then we added wind and solar, variable renewables, and a predictable obstacle appeared. Wind changes hour by hour and also usually seasonally. Solar rises and falls every day and also usually seasonally. And if we don't change our usage patterns accordingly, we've got a problem. It's not a big problem, though, until you've got a big proportion of variable renewables. If you're like South Australia and meeting 100% of demand on spring days with solar power alone, then it matters if your winter solar output drops to half. If you're like Denmark and on windy days generating twice as much power as you can consume, then it matters if there are low wind weeks where it's only meeting 20% of demand. This is the problem that long-duration energy storage is supposed to solve, and why the number of LDES startups ballooned in the 2015 to 2020 window as variable renewable penetration pushed towards and even past 50% in some grids. However, while there are many startups and proposals, there are relatively few large-scale commercial projects operating today. Why? The main reason is that markets reward storage technologies that can cycle every day, with far less reward for ones that cycle any less than that. Electricity demand follows a strong daily rhythm. Low overnight, a rise in the morning, and a larger peak in the evening. Wind and solar add their own variability. Studies that decompose the mismatch between renewable generation and electricity demand show that daily variability is the largest contributor to fluctuations. In a solar-heavy grid, wholesale prices respond to this pattern. They swing hardest between the midday solar peak and the evening ramp. There just isn't much money to be made by charging in summer and holding it until winter. That's one cycle per year. In contrast, there is a whole pile of money to be made by storing cheap midday solar and selling it every single evening, and increasingly another little pile from charging overnight and discharging into the morning peak. That revenue goes to lithium-ion batteries, which can easily handle the 300 to 500 cycles per year that earn the highest value. The business case is simple, and markets are already responding. Early incentives have really accelerated Australia's rollout, and now lithium-ion batteries are dramatically changing our electricity market. In November this year, utility batteries discharged more energy than peaking gas on the main grid. Add the roughly 2 gigawatt hours of home batteries already installed, and very soon, batteries will be the number one firma of variable renewables in Australia, more than all gas and all hydro combined. It's an incredible shift. But daily cycling is the easy part, and it doesn't solve the Dunkelflaute problem. In sunless, windless periods, you don't have surplus midday or overnight energy to charge batteries, and it doesn't matter how many you have, flat batteries aren't any help. So this is the role left for long-duration technologies, right? That's what most people expected to happen, a nice, neat division of labour. Lithium-ion would handle the daily variability, and anything longer would naturally fall to long-duration storage technologies. But that handover point has been shifting because lithium-ion has quietly expanded into durations that were once assumed to belong only to LDES. One point I see people get wrong is thinking that lithium-ion can't do long durations, as if it's a technical limitation. But think about it. If you charge your phone and leave it off, it'll still be full days or weeks later. It's not like all the charge leaks out if you leave a battery full for more than 24 hours. The duration of any energy storage is just the ratio of its stored energy to its discharge power. A 2-hour battery becomes a 4-hour battery if you discharge at half the rate, slow it down by a factor of 4, and it's now an 8-hour battery. The limit for lithium-ion duration is actually an economic limit rather than a technical one, and that limit applies equally to long-duration storage techs as it does to lithium-ion. Lithium-ion battery prices have been reducing so fast, faster actually than most alternative technologies. This is why lithium-ion is now usually the preferred technology for 8-hour storage projects, and that is still pushing out to beat alternative technologies for 12-hour durations and inevitably beyond. But I don't think we'll ever see batteries so cheap that it makes sense to charge them in summer and leave them full until winter. If we need that, some other technology will need to take over for multi-day or seasonal storage. So somewhere between 8 hours and 6 months, there must be a point where lithium-ion ends and long-duration energy storage truly begins. But where? To figure that out, let's walk through the main technologies, how they work, where they fit, and what real projects tell us. Pumped hydro converts electricity into gravitational potential energy by pumping water uphill and then letting it fall back down through a turbine when you need the power. With the right geography, it's quite straightforward to get really long storage duration. You simply raise the height of the dam wall. Hydro dams are simple and pretty cost-effective over their really long lifetimes. That's why almost all the world's existing energy storage was built this way, around 99% of all storage capacity in the world today. But nearly all those dams were constructed decades ago, in an era when large civil projects were the only cost-effective way to store energy. High upfront costs, environmental constraints, and a lack of suitable new sites mean that most new energy storage capacity added today is not pumped hydro at all, but lithium-ion batteries. But pumped hydro may be experiencing a revival. China, for example, has recently built some very large pumped hydro stations and plans to eventually more than triple the amount that they have today. Australia's Kidston project is another example of new pumped hydro, a 250-megawatt, 2-gigawatt-hour system repurposed from an abandoned gold mine. It's the first pumped hydro project to be completed in Australia in over 40 years, and the first ever developed by a private company. Did you make a lemon or a potato battery when you were a kid? Flow batteries are an electrochemistry pack like that, scaled up to the size of a shipping container, containing two big tanks of liquid electrolytes. When you charge the battery, you pump the liquids past a membrane and change their chemical state. When you discharge it, you reverse the reaction and get electricity back out. What's nice is that the energy capacity just depends on tank size. The bigger the tanks, the longer the duration, and tanks are cheap. In practice, most commercial systems today are around 4 hours, but the promise is that you can stretch that to 10 or more just by adding more liquid. A US federally funded project is developing a 24-hour vanadium flow battery to test how well it can support the grid at utility scale. Meanwhile, Brisbane-based zinc-bromine hybrid flow battery company Redflow unfortunately entered voluntary administration just as it seemed on the cusp of finally reaching the large scale it had been working towards for over a decade. It's a real shame. I visited Redflow a few years ago and made this video about their technology development. But the company ultimately couldn't raise enough capital to scale, and its assets are now being sold off. Iron air batteries run on the most everyday of chemical reactions, rusting. When the battery discharges, the iron literally rusts. It reacts with oxygen from the air. When you charge it, you unrust it, turning that iron oxide back into iron again. The big advantage is cost. Iron and air are really cheap. Form Energy is the company developing these iron air batteries, and their commercial systems are designed for 100-hour duration. Their first projects include a 1.5 gigawatt-hour system in Georgia and 1 gigawatt-hour systems in Minnesota and Colorado, which are all due to be completed in the next year. Compressed air storage is basically a scaled-up balloon-powered car. You use electricity to run big compressors and squeeze air into an underground cavern. That stores energy as pressure. When the grid needs power, you let the air out through a turbine, just like letting go of the balloon and watching the car shoot across the table. Hydrostor is developing several large compressed air energy storage systems. In Australia, they're developing a 200 megawatt 8-hour project in Broken Hill, using an existing mine as the underground cavern where the compressed air will be stored. This project is particularly interesting to me because they chose to add 8-hour storage instead of upgrading the transmission to this very remote town. Hydrostor is also progressing two larger 8-hour projects in California. Gravity storage lifts heavy blocks or weights and lowers them later to generate electricity. Energy Vault is the best known example. In their early days, they produced some very eye-catching simulations showing an electric winch assembling and disassembling giant concrete Jenga towers. By now, they've moved on to slightly less obviously flawed concepts, and they actually built some in China. There are so many other examples of gravity energy storage, hauling weights up and down mine shafts, sending weights on electric trains up and down hills, carrying buckets of gravel up and down hills in repurposed ski lifts. Let me know if I've forgotten your favorite example in the comments. There are so many crazy ideas here. The core idea is simple. Convert electricity into potential energy, really similar to what grandfather clocks have been doing for hundreds of years. But the execution is messy. They take up a lot of space. They require heavy industrial equipment and so many moving parts that wear out. And many of these techs require extremely precise control. They also don't really scale well. They can't match lithium ion on cost, not at 2 hours, not at 10, and not at 100. So it's kind of hard to see the point. The final long-duration energy storage technology I want to cover is hydrogen. You use electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. The hydrogen is stored, ideally in a conveniently located salt cavern, and later you burn it or run it through a fuel cell to get electricity back out. The science is simple, but the round-trip efficiency is terrible and the infrastructure can be expensive, especially when you factor in the effort needed to ensure safety. If you ever used the POP test in high school chemistry, that should have taught you that this stuff is explosive. What hydrogen is good for is long durations, days, weeks, even seasonal storage, and it can be a nearly like-for-like replacement for gas turbines, which is appealingly simple. In Austria, the Underground Sun Storage 2030 project has demonstrated seasonal hydrogen storage in underground reservoirs, showing that hydrogen can be held for months and later used for electricity and heat. So, where do we stand on these techs? When the long-duration energy storage boom started in around 2015, most people thought that 8 or 10 hours was going to be way too much for lithium-ion batteries, and this time frame was the target duration of many techs. Take a look at this chart from the excellent book, Monetizing Energy Storage, released less than 3 years ago. It shows lithium-ion batteries suited to around 1 hour discharge duration and maybe a few hundred megawatt hours capacity. And there was nothing extraordinary about this chart at the time it was released. This book has a ton of energy superstars endorsements, and this chart matched up pretty well with what most people were thinking at the time. Less than 3 years later, lithium-ion batteries are pushing out to 12 hours, and the biggest are well over a gigawatt hour. Technologies that started development in 2015 aiming for 10-hour duration were not expecting lithium ion to be their competitors, and now they find that what they thought would be their space on this chart has just been swallowed up. Their mistake was looking at where lithium ion was then, not where it would be after they'd spent 10 years developing their technologies. One of the things I keep coming back to in this video is that most long-duration energy storage technologies aren't actually new ideas at all. They're old ideas, scaled up. So before we go further, I want to show you something I got recently that really fits neatly with that theme. This is the Ultimate Guide to Rebuilding a Civilization from Hungry Minds. It's an illustrated encyclopedia of how humans figured out the fundamentals, engineering, materials, energy, timekeeping, all the building blocks modern technology still relies on. One of the reasons I like it is that it makes something very clear. A lot of the ideas we think of as advanced technology today are actually very old ideas, just refined and scaled up. And a lot of care has gone into this book. There were more than 50 people involved in creating it, and it raised over $2 million on Kickstarter and Indiegogo before becoming a bestseller. Take mechanical clocks, for example. Early clocks stored energy using gravity, lifting a weight and later using springs to store it. You'd slowly put energy in and then let it out in a very controlled way over time. That basic idea turns out to sit right at the heart of a lot of energy storage technologies that we've talked about in this video. It also makes a really nice gift for curious people, the kind of thing that sticks around rather than gets forgotten after Christmas. And if you're not sure exactly which of their books is best, they do gift cards as well. You'll see a QR code on screen, and there's also a link in the description with a Christmas discount. Thanks, Hungry Minds, for sponsoring today's video. If we look at the LDS techs we've just covered, most of them have developed products at 10 hours or shorter duration, and in most, maybe all cases, significantly more expensive than lithium ion can do the same duration. I think in the absence of specific support or preferencing for these technologies over lithium ion, we can already rule out gravity energy storage, most flow batteries, and compressed air unless they're able to pivot to longer duration whilst they additionally continue to aggressively reduce costs. That leaves iron air, hydrogen, and pumped hydro left with a clear offering that lithium ion can't do better and cheaper. But even then, how much do we actually need? I'm going to take a bold stance here and suggest that we will end up needing vastly less than what most people today think. I'm going to start with a local example. In Australia, our market operator's plan for the future energy system does call for a large amount of dispatchable storage, nearly 20 times as much as what we have today. But on average, it's not much more than 10 hours duration. In fact, in the near-term pipeline of committed battery projects, we are set to already approximately quintuple what we've got now. It's probably not actually going to take that long to get us most of what we need. A really simple illustration of what I'm talking about when I say we'll need a little to no extra long-duration energy storage in a country like Australia with excellent renewable resources comes from David Osborn, who I've talked about quite often before. He has created a real-time, real-conditions model of a hypothetical renewable Australian grid based on a simple scale-up of real wind and solar performance combined with just 5 hours of storage in addition to existing hydro. And this model has achieved 98.6% renewable electricity over the 4+ years he's been running it. A longer-term academic study found that we very rarely see worse Dunkelflauter than what we've seen in the 4 years of real weather that David's model has covered. Those are Australian results, though, and we've probably got the best combined wind and solar resources in the world. A German study offers a good example of how storage needs rise in more winter peaky systems where solar can't do the heavy lifting like it can in Australia. They found that in Germany, storage requirements expand dramatically from gigawatt hours to terawatt hours once renewable penetration pushes beyond about 85 to 90%. So what about that last 2 to 15%, depending on where you're located? This small slice of the challenge ends up attracting far more attention and funding than it deserves, in my opinion, despite representing only a minor part of what a renewable grid actually needs to overcome. I'm going to say something really controversial now. Who cares about that last 2 to 15% right now? We've got gas turbines today. We can keep using them for a bit. Gasp. Do we have to get to absolute zero fossil methane immediately if that means we need massive amounts of LDES that need subsidizing? Because one cycle per year or even one cycle per month energy storage technology will never stand on its own. I don't think we should do that. I would rather see us get to 85 to 98% emissions reductions in electricity very quickly using technologies we already have that basically pay for themselves. Getting most of the job done fast frees up money and brain power to tackle sectors like industry, agriculture, aviation, and shipping. Sectors we must decarbonize also that don't have self-funding technologies available to eliminate the bulk of their emissions. And by cutting electricity emissions quickly, we buy ourselves years of breathing room to figure out the genuinely hard last few percent. It matters so much more to reduce emissions as fast as possible than to get exactly zero electricity emissions by 2040 or 2050 or whenever. And in 20 years' time, who knows what the energy technology landscape will look like? Batteries were wildly expensive just 10 years ago. Now they're literally everywhere. Flexibility technologies like smart tariffs, industrial demand shifting, smart home energy systems, they might end up being the real game changers, meaning we need even less storage than even I think today. If we need to replace the last bit of fossil methane later with a clean fuel, we can. We don't have to decide today what that fuel would be. Australia might not need much long-duration storage at all because we don't suffer the long, deep Dunkelflauter that Europe does. Other places will need more. Different tools will suit different regions, I accept that. But what's clear is this. Lithium ion will keep pushing outwards in duration. Of the other technologies, I expect that pumped hydro will keep doing most of the long stuff where geographically feasible. And the rest of the LDES toolbox will be lucky to find tiny niches where it makes sense, except for the few techs that can achieve extremely low energy costs. If you enjoy these deep dive engineering videos and want to help shape what topics I cover next, You can support the channel through Patreon or becoming a YouTube member. Supporters get early access to videos and can join the discussion on our private Discord server, where we chat about everything from grid modelling to heat pumps to whatever wind turbine drama is unfolding that week. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next video.